Welcome to Check It Out, Comrade. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And every other week we'll be checking out some indie games that we want you to check it out.
Yes, please check it out.
This week we're going to be doing Rogue Legacy.
Yep.
And Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs.
Yep. Rogue Legacy, A Machine for Pigs. Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs. Check it out, comrade.
Check it out, comrade.
Machine for Pigs. the best subtitle. And, like, I want that to become, like, the Electric Boogaloo or, like, Back in the Habit.
Just, like, everyone uses it for everything?
Yeah, for anything that's two.
Anything that's like two.
Yeah, let's get together. Well, let's have a birthday, too. A Machine for Pigs. Started out with Rogue Legacy, developed by Cellar Door Games. Came out earlier in the summer, June 27th, and is available for just about all the downloadable platforms. What's cool about Rogue Legacy, Nick?
Rogue Legacy is a platformer that takes a lot of roguelike elements, as the name suggests. So there's permadeath, there's random level generation. There's even more random elements in the ways of what your character's abilities are. You don't even get to choose. Like you get to choose between three of randomly generated characters. But what is neat about Rogue Legacy and what it takes away from other, say, like Spelunky or other like roguelike inspired platformers, is it has this element of carryover. It's generational. Every other character is the previous character's child, and they inherit the money that the previous character had gotten by traveling through this castle. Mm-hmm. You can spend that money on upgrades to your stats and just new weapons and runes that give you sort of other special abilities. And so you get this overarching scale of improvement to your characters each new generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes countless generations, hundreds of kids to just incrementally improve your chances.
As with most roguelikes, it's not a game you're ever going to beat on the first time anyway. But aside from just the normal roguelike of player improvement, where your knowledge of how the game works helps you get through it, you also get this other element that actually is probably required. Like, I don't know if I've seen anyone try to do level one runs of this game yet. I'm sure it's out there, but it'd be very, very difficult.
Yeah. I should look that up. I'm curious about whether that's possible.
Yeah.
It's interesting, too, because, I mean, that the kind of unlocking... So the thing that differentiates a lot of, like, roguelikes or roguelites, I guess, is what, you know, what kind of carryover you get and how the next game is going to be easier other than knowledge. And they really run a gamut, you know. And this one is fairly kind in that regard because it's direct. Like in something like Binding of Isaac, you know, your subsequent Isaacs you can unlock items and you have a chance of getting them.
Yeah, it just adds them to the deck. Like you might pull them.
And they're not all good. Like you'll unlock things that are pretty shitty, and bad things get added to the deck as well. Kind of like curses and new bosses and stuff. So this one, you know, it's all pretty much positive. Like it is a roguelike with a really traditional arc, of empowerment arc, because you're always getting better.
Yes.
In the game.
Like, very classic sort of RPG scaling.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like playing with those roguelike elements, but with none of the, like, I mean, it's a hard game, but it's not that punishing, you know, way that something like an actual rogue would be. Which, you know, makes it more, you know, more friendly and more fun and lends itself well to the mechanics. Because the mechanics are kind of breezy platform mechanics, you know? It's interesting too that like that generational thing is neat because one of the twists that they have is this whole idea of kind of genetic defects, you know, and mutations.
Yeah.
Most of which don't have a mechanical effect, but the ones that do are really cool.
Yeah. So each time you pick between your three sort of your next generation, all of your kin, some of them have defects that can severely affect gameplay. Like some of them are colorblind or afraid of chickens, which is really funny because the only means of getting health back, besides you know upgrading yourself so you kind of do some life steal, is you find random legs of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have this defect, those legs of chicken become live chickens and they attack you.
Yeah, so you have to kill them first.
Yeah.
Before they can do that. Or like short, you know, nearsighted. Mm.
Which
short.
Blurs out the yep. The exterior of the monitor.
Yeah. Short, tall, you know, skinny, fat, like all these different, you know, things that people can be. And that, you know, that's real clever. Like, I wish that there were more of them.
Yeah.
And there's going to be an update to this. Part of the reason why we chose to do this game now is that they're planning, you know, they've announced that and they're planning an update. It's going to add a lot of content to the game.
Yeah. So hopefully that comes out really soon, and this will be sort of fresh in the memories of everyone, and it'll bring more light to this game that we already think is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I really want them to add is more mutations. One of the big things that you unlock too is, I guess playing into that Isaac thing, when you're unlocking something that's not guaranteed is when you unlock classes, because then you're unlocking kind of just possibility.
Yeah.
For these different things. And, you know, the classes you start out with are decent, but I had my most success with some of those classes. What's your go-to?
Lich. I love Lich.
Yeah. Lich is real good. The Lich like drains every enemy it kills, increases its max health. So you're really encouraged to fully explore a floor.
Yeah.
And get really powerful.
What was I forget what the upgrade to the Lich was. But the upgrade allowed you to then use a spell to remove some of your health to add to your mana pool. So then you could max out your health and then reduce your health back down to base and increase your mana pool instead, and then go attack some more enemies and try and increase your health pool again.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can get like tons of MP and HP.
Yeah, but the best thing about the Lich actually is the Crow's spell that he almost always starts with, because that spell is amazing. It just you pop it; it takes a lot of MP to pop, but when you do, it just sends out a bunch of crows that hit every enemy on the screen for a decent bit of damage, depending on how upgraded your magic damage is. And it can pretty much one-shot most of the easy enemies on the screen by the time you're a few generations in. So,
yep, that's super good. I'm a big spell sword guy.
Spell sword was pretty good too. I did enjoy spell sword.
It was like their gimmick is that they get MP back whenever they swing their sword, so you can use magic a lot.
Yeah.
And the magic and like a lot of the just kind of hallmarks of the game take from Castlevania.
Yes.
So the magic they're kind of like sub-weapons. Or I mean, a lot of them are direct correlations to sub-weapons in Castlevania. Like the axes and the daggers. And, yeah.
Right.
So being able to get, you know, swing your sword at an enemy to get a sub-weapon back in Castlevania, if you think in those terms, you can see how that'd be really powerful. And then they can also cast a really powerful version of an item or a magic spell, which some of which are just incredible.
Which only they can do. They're the only ones who can cast the more powerful version of the spell. So.
Yep. Yeah, which is like a thing they did in later Castlevanias too. So like, I think in Symphony of the Night, if you play as Richter, you can do the big breaks and make make it rain holy water and
nice.
Such. Yeah, so definitely a cool like little love letter to that series.
Yeah, the game is definitely the platforming as well is very Castlevania like. It's not purely the spells, but.
You have a lot more control over your guy than Castlevania. Like, Castlevania is real slow and kind of stilted.
Yeah.
At least, I guess the early ones. I guess it plays a little bit more like a later Castlevania.
Yeah, I think so. And instead of having a whip, you have a sword, but it's the same sort of, like, directional and forward-facing short attack that is your primary attack.
Yeah, if you think about, like, a Symphony of the Night or later, and even down to, like, the air dashing and stuff like that, like those kind of movement powers that you get in Symphony of the Night, it's not like a Castlevania 1 or anything like that.
No.
Yeah, it's much, much more sprightly.
Symphony of the Night and past. Yeah. The GBA, the DSs, and all those.
Yep. I really like the way that the rune system works, where you kind of create a build for each run, depending on what you're trying to do. So like there'll be like shitty weapons that don't do very much damage, but increase your chances of gold. And there's a shitty class that does that too, like where you get more gold. And you can kind of outfit yourself in this like lousy equipment with this lousy class, but everything you get every amount of money you get will have a lot of impact.
Yeah. So if you're purely just trying to get some more money for a new upgrade, you can swap yourself out and aim for that.
Yep. Do some mining, which is, you know, once I unlocked the Splunker class, that whenever he came up, I used him just to do mining.
Yep.
And then you can do kind of certain classes for the bosses, of which there are only five. Like, they're just kind of, the bosses of these different areas in this, like, constantly rejiggering castle.
Yes.
And once you beat them, that's it. You don't have to beat them again. Like, the rest of the castle repopulates, but the boss doesn't.
Yes, it's static in that there's always the same bosses somewhere in each of the static areas, but the levels within those areas are rearranged. So mm-hmm. the force is always directly right, and the dark is always directly down. But the actual layout of the levels, the rooms in those levels are randomized every time.
Mm-hmm. Unless you pay for it not to be, which again is a real cool like little wrinkle.
You know, I never actually used that. Like, I knew what it did, and I didn't like the idea of giving up money to get a non-randomized version of the dungeon.
I only did it when I was, if I was doing a boss run. I'm saying, like, I'm not trying to get money. I just want to beat this boss. I need it to be in the same place.
Yeah.
You know, because I died against it. I would do that. And it makes trying your luck against a boss over and over and again a lot easier.
Yeah, I can imagine so.
Yeah.
But like I said, I played the Lich a lot, which means I wanted to go complete as many rooms as I could before I went to a boss anyway.
Yeah.
So
yep.
I guess it played to my advantage to not know where the boss room was.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, good game.
Yeah, awesome game. Highly recommended. And like we said, it's available. It's actually not on the Xbox Live network, but it's available on Steam for Windows currently, but they are working on a Linux port apparently, and it's also available on PS3 and Vita. So pick it up, downloadable title, I think it was $15 at release.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, totally worth it, even at that price. Like, there's a lot of gameplay you get out of it, and they're apparently bringing more free in future updates. So
yeah, having that on handheld would be dangerous.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I could see spending a lot of time, like if I had a Vita, on
for
this
sure.
game.
I would too. So,
yeah. Super good.
All right. So with that, let's move on to Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs.
Yes.
This game is a survival horror game mm-hmm. made by the Chinese Room, and who made Dear Esther, and mm-hmm. is published by Frictional Games, who made Amnesia the Dark Descent.
Yep.
So, as we're talking about this, keep that in mind, that this is a Chinese Room game that
yes.
is a spiritual successor to a Frictional game.
Yes.
And if which you is played, very important.
Yeah, if you played any of those games, like you'll see the disconnect there.
Oh, yes.
Because it's not 100% disconnect. It's not like the guys who made Gears of War making the sequel to Gone Home or anything.
Right.
But they are, as I found in this, they are incompatible. Like they don't work real well together. You know, so Amnesia, if you haven't played it, it's like, you know, almost too scary to play. Like Amnesia is so good and so fucking terrifying. And is a, you know, a decent, like you play a survival horror game, you know, it's about resource management and you know, choosing your battles. You know, you think about a Resident Evil or something like that. But Amnesia, is super disempowering. Like this is the first Amnesia. Your only resource that you have is, you know, lamplight, and you have to hide from the monster, and you have no offensive ability whatsoever.
Yeah.
They kept that in this, but stripped out like a lot of the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to, I mean, we're going to have a spoiler space at the end, but it's hard to get too far into it without getting into some of those things.
Yeah. But we're going to have to talk in broad terms here, but,
yeah.
So I do want to say though, first of all, I did enjoy A Machine for Pigs, but not nearly as much as The Dark Descent, and I kind of dislike that it even has the Amnesia title.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the thing it stole, or I mean, not stole, but the thing it uses is really just the engine of Amnesia, and then a couple of plot points and a little bit of some thematic stuff.
Yeah, there's a couple plot connections. If you've played The Dark Descent by means of the orb, and it's not really too spoilery because it's told in very vague terms in both of the games.
Mm-hmm.
But
if you
caught on to what the orb was in Dark Descent, similarly, that there's a orb in this one that is a corrupting figure in the storyline.
Yeah, if you like games with orbs,
yeah,
you will like this game.
You will like this game.
Yeah, so if you're into orbs.
So just to talk in general terms about the gameplay a little bit. So it is a first-person game where you don't have any weapons. All you have is a lamp. Mm-hmm. They did away with the means of keeping your lamp lit, the tinder boxes,
mm-hmm.
From the previous game. You just have a lamp that lasts forever now. But you're mainly wandering around through a fairly linear game, performing fairly easy puzzles. So it's a mostly storyline, walkthrough
yeah.
Style game. Which is very similar to the Chinese Room's previous game of Dear Esther. So, like I said, keep that in mind highly when playing this game.
Yeah, it's not, because, I mean, and it's all the changes in that gameplay come from reduction, like, not really from addition. You know, so, like, them getting, you know, that getting rid of the tinderboxes, getting rid of the inventory necessitated simplifying the puzzles, pretty much down to the state of non-puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, like that, there's like a section in this game where there's a machine missing gears, which is a real classic, you know, kind of a survival horror thing. And then the gears are just, you know, 3 feet
right
away.
Yeah, they're right there.
It's not a puzzle. Like, there's really, it's just, I don't even know what you would call that.
It's just minor blocks in your path.
Yeah. It's just slowing you down.
Yeah.
Most of, and similar to, you know, whereas Dear Esther would read to you, you know, just kind of passages from a poem in random order. This one you find, actually, it's a little bit like Gone Home, where it's an epistiary. Like, you're finding, you're finding letters and journal entries.
Yeah, there's little bits of sort of audio clips that will just come in at various points in the game. But the majority of the story is told through just found messages.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, and the basic terms, like, you're a guy named Oswald Mandis. You wake up in a mansion and you're looking for your kids.
That's all you remember. That's all you remember. Amnesia. That's where the title comes from.
Yep.
All you remember is you're looking for your kids.
Yeah. You have the titular amnesia. And most of the game, so there's so like very little gameplay to it to discuss. Like, you make your way through these kind of set pieces and get the story unfolded for you. Amnesia, one of the big gameplay mechanics in that was kind of one of pursuit, was being trying to stay away from a threat that you had no ability to deal with. And they revisit that a little bit here, but very rarely.
And it's almost never really a threat. Like, the veil is very thin as to the fact that it's not like in Dark Descent, you could get, you know, hit by the monsters and it would have a slight negative impact. Again, here there's kind of a very minor negative impact when you get killed by something. But there's also sort of these just set piece portions where it tries to make it out like you're being chased, but if you end up not hurrying at all, it doesn't actually affect anything. Like, it's meant to sort of make your heart race and try and get you to finish what you're doing a little bit faster. And there isn't actually any negative to not doing so.
Yeah. It's not, it has, if it's, you know, you can't even say it has its feet in both Frictional and the Chinese Room. Like, it's leaning its weight firmly in the Chinese Room
in that respect. So,
like, they are not interested in a play experience so much as telling the story that they wanted to tell, you know, and whereas, like, the thing with Dear Esther, which I really enjoyed, is that that's the game that's on far enough on the narrative play spectrum to where I struggle with, like, why it has to be a game.
Yeah.
You know, that's the point. Like, anything, I'm very generous in that respect. Like, you know, Gone Home is a game. The Walking Dead is a game. I will, you know, I think those, the interplay, like, what you're doing is very important to what that game's trying to express. Dear Esther, I'm not as sure about. I like it as an experience.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel very much like a game. This is a little bit more gamey, but not very much at all. Which isn't a deal breaker, but
I agree.
Yeah.
I think the only thing about Dear Esther that really plays well into the fact that you're even controlling the character is the very end of it, which then they strip away your control anyway. So anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah, that drives me fucking nuts. Like, I hate that choice so much. Yeah, and
anyway.
Not dissimilar here. I mean, I'm almost ready to go into spoiler mode with this because, like, the things that in throwing some positives out there, like, the game is really unnerving at a lot of points. Like, they build attention well, and there's a good amount of, like, you go into a room, you do something, when you go back to the previous room, there's, like, a pig mask on the floor now. And, like, that stuff worked on me pretty well.
And I think that the main themes, and as convoluted and ridiculous as the plot is, the sort of, you know, unnervingness of the general goings-on in the plot, I enjoy them. I think it's good in that way. I just don't know if the gameplay lends itself well to what they were trying to... Anyway, so I think we're pretty much said all we could say without being too spoilerific. So what we're going to do is, if you stick with us to after the music at the end of the episode, we'll go into full spoiler.
Yeah. If anyone's looking purely for a recommendation, I'm going to say, like, if you like Amnesia and you like Dear Esther and you like horror, this is probably worth it, especially on a sale. But I had real, if you're, you know, most people like Amnesia are really into Amnesia, and I thought, you know, Frictional, like I liked, you know, love both all the Penumbra games coming before that. They're some of my favorite games. So I can say that this was probably the most disappointing game I played in a long time. Like, yeah. I was very disappointed with it.
So I would echo that, but also more if you liked Chinese Room, if you liked Dear Esther and you want to see them attempt something horror, this is up your alley. If you didn't like that, you're not going to like this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. So, but Dear Esther is a prerequisite for this game. Like, you should play that and be okay with that.
That'll very much weigh you as to whether or not you'll like this one. And Dear Esther is less of a time investment and much more streamlined as far as how the gameplay and storyline are related or lack thereof.
Yeah, well, it's interesting too, because it's not the opposite doesn't work. So, like, if you loved Dear Esther, I don't think you'll necessarily like this, you know, because, like, I could see the concessions to gaminess really annoying somebody who just wants a narrative experience.
That's true, but I think there's very few people out there who played Dear Esther and aren't also generally video game people.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't think there's very many people, if any at all, out there who are purely looking for the Dear Esther experience in life.
Yeah.
So,
and if so, like, if that's your thing, then, like, the line goes to Gone Home. That is, like, the proper sequel to Dear Esther. You know, in a way. Whereas this is an uncomfortable hybrid, appropriately enough.
Yes.
Like, it is a hybrid.
Definitely a hybrid. All right. So we are going to close out the episode there. Some administration stuff.
Yeah. Ratings and reviews. Always welcome.
Please.
By this point, we will be on iTunes.
And we're always looking for recommendations if you guys have an indie game you really like. Maybe something we've never even checked out. We'll check it out ourselves and echo that back to all of you listeners if we enjoy it. So
we'll check it out, and then you will check it out. I'll have Cole set up a contact form on duckfeed.tv. So the way you can suggest that would be that. And then we'll include our email addresses and stuff on the website. But
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right.
So. You know, if you are planning to play a machine for pigs, stop the recording now. Because we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the individual plot beats and some of the things that we have to talk about. To talk about, for me at least, like, some of the things that didn't work for me and some of the things that did. But that, since the game is so much about just experiencing it, you know, uncovering it piece by piece, it's very spoiler sensitive. Like, kind of knowing that these things happen, I could see ruining it for you. So proceed at your own risk.
Agreed. So I think Gary, as soon as I beat the game, you already went ahead and had some comments to say about it. So go ahead and echo those, and we'll respond in kind on air.
Yeah, I beat this more or less over a weekend. And I feel like the two things that I feel like are really interfere with my joy of this. One we talked about in the body of the episode, which is the fact that it's so reductionist in what they did to the gameplay. Like, I like the story of the first Amnesia, but I really like the gameplay as well.
Yeah.
And I was seeking that experience. Like, that's not what this is, fine, you know, but it could have been, you know, like, there's possibility space in this game for that.
I think I kind of would have, in that regard, I would have liked to see the Chinese Room do what they did and then hand it back to Frictional.
Yeah.
And say, like, all right, like, here's what we came up with. Now you guys make an Amnesia sequel.
Yeah, or Frictional hires the writer.
Right.
Like, Dan Pinchbeck, you know, and Jessica Curry, the composer, like, the writer and the composer, like, I like that.
Yeah.
Get them, you know, get them in on this, and then just let them do the gameplay.
Yeah.
You know?
That would have been such a better game, like.
Yeah. It would have been amazing. Like, it would have been, like, really good. Because, and so, I mean, I like the story a lot, but it's more, like, to put a qualifier on it, like, I like individual elements of the story a lot. I think as a whole, it's a bit of a mess.
And I totally agree with you, and this was the main point I wanted you to bring up. I agree that there's, like, a ton of different main elements that all themselves could have been easily their own story and worked fine.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a comment you said about it earlier. But I also, like, playing Dear Esther, it being this, like, three-tiered, multi-generational people exploring this island, all convoluted and mixed up, and you can't quite make piece of what is what plotline,
mm-hmm.
Kind of lends itself to that experience. It's like, I'm on this weird island, I'm, you know, finding out little bits of these weird stories, and I can't make heads or tails of exactly what's going on, but then you start slowly thinning it out to just the most recent guy by the end, and mm-hmm. that, like, works out really, I think the arc, like, the sort of waveform of that game works out really well, and I think that could have worked well in Machine for Pigs. There being all these, like, weird individual elements of the fall of Mandus could have been really cool, but they ended up just leaving it convoluted and never really thinning it out.
Well, they were by nature convoluted by the story they were trying to tell, because they didn't have a separation. Like, so the doing the different generations in Dear Esther is really important, because they're kind of separate stories, but in A Machine for Pigs, it's all the same story. So yeah. All of those things are not layered on top of each other. It's all, they all exist on the same line. So, like, when you think about the actual machine itself and, like, what the plan is, you know, or what the, you know, and well, there's two parts of this. So one of it is that everything exists towards one end, which makes it seem kind of ridiculous. The other being a genre thing is that because it's a horror game, you know, there is an antagonist, and you start thinking in those terms. You know, because it's borrowing, like, it wants to borrow the trappings of the horror genre for when they want to use them. So they want to have ghost kids and spooky attics, but they want you to just think, like, time is timey-wimey, and that anything can be anything, and it doesn't really work. So, like,
yeah,
you think about the machine itself, like, what is the machine's plan? Like, what does the machine do? Like, A, I like the idea of a machine that exists to increase its own size, like a sentient machine that kidnaps people in order to make pig workers to make it bigger.
Yeah.
I'm into that. However, its goal is also to have this, like, ridiculous kind of doomsday alarm that puts pneumatic pistons up to the city to make pigmen just kind of destroy this village. And they, like, they're talking about that in the same terms as, like, ending the world. You know, like, we need to stop, like, you know, it's a lot of anxiety about the turn of the century. You know, a lot of, and it's all like, okay, but so that's not going to really do anything. Like, there could be an army of pigmen, but there's also an army, many armies of regular men.
Right.
Around there, you know, so it seems kind of ineffectual at that point. And then there's this whole, like, atomic bomb parable.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the machine's building an atomic bomb. It's going to split the atom, you know? Like, which is it? If it's splitting the atom, why does it need the pigs? If it needs the pigs, why does it need to keep getting bigger? You know, it just unnecessarily, it's like too many plots in one spot.
It's a ton of plots. And that's not even all of them. Like, there's also Mandus himself being split by the orb into actual two, you know, physicalities, if not physicalities, then, like, spiritual elements.
Yeah.
One of which is driving the machine to an extent and is contacting you on the phone. There's the kids who...
Yep. Yeah, the kids who, like, if you don't know that those kids are dead... Like, from the moment the game boots up, I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
Like, it is not, like, when I talk about it borrowing things from, like, horror tropes and wanting to be, like, kind of taken at face value in some things and not in others, like, you know, you can't play this as if it's going to be, you have to subvert that somehow if you're going to make it this obvious, you know? Like, we know this is a horror game. We know that kids, like, with ghostly voices in the attic, like, those kids are already dead. The game is called Amnesia. Like, it's just too easy to, like, I don't try to puzzle out games before I play them. Like, I'm not like, oh, I'm going to figure out the plot twist. But it was too easy to, and the game never gave me any credit for my intelligence in that regard, you know? And then the whole idea of him murdering the kids because he saw these visions of, like, the horrors of war.
Yeah, know? Well, the horrors of the 20th century, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, the orb showed him the future, which, although led him to be able to advance technology within the machine far beyond that of the 19th century technology that it was, you know, Industrial Revolution technology that it was previous to that, it also made him fear for his children being born into that world, so he killed them in a Mayan sacrificial way. Yep. It's ridiculous.
And why did it, it's like he's got anxiety about the horrors of war, so he, part of his soul creates the greatest weapon of war that's ever known that is just going to perpetrate those horrors. Like he's not preventing anything. He's just speeding it up.
I felt like the machine wanted to not like kill people, but you know, bring people in as these pigs.
Yeah. I mean, and that works. Like if they just, the idea was just to turn everyone on Earth into a pig, which is like pretty silly, and right. An elevator pitch like sounds pretty silly, but then it doesn't rectify with the nuclear bomb.
Right.
Part of it that's definitely happening. Like I just had this weird idea, like feeling that every possible menacing idea that the writer had went in.
Right.
You know, and it desperately needs an editor.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
So badly. Like,
yeah, I'll agree with that.
You know, and then so, but on the other side, so if, you know, to talk about the Prey, like I didn't totally dislike the game, you know, so
right.
There are elements of it. Like I love the, like the scene, my favorite part of the game is when you're in the kind of the living quarters of the pigs.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's so good. Like the ecology
like
of these
and stuff.
Yeah. And then just kind of like playing with blocks and just living and all the signs about how they can't fornicate.
Yeah.
You know, around them. Like it's just very interesting. Like I like the idea of that really scary, you know, really creepy little world that they've created. Like a nice ecology there.
Visually and sort of even to most extent, the level design, like going deeper and deeper into this machine, is actually fairly decent. Mm-hmm. Like that's definitely not terribly done. It's just sort of the mixed opinions of how they wanted to do gameplay elements and the fact that the story didn't have an editor that really like shadowed the downfall of this game not being as nearly as well received as Dark Descent was, which Dark Descent is still like one of my favorite games ever. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, well, not just, and then we talk about visually, like, you know, there are other problems with it in that, those pigs that look like, I love looking at them when they're pathetic and sad, don't work to me as a threat. Really, like
yeah.
I wasn't very scared of the pigs, especially when you run into fucking Mecha Pig at the end.
Yeah,
like the electric Tesla pig boss fight, which is like what is so misguided. Like if you don't know how to make a game, like don't try.
Yeah,
you know, like don't try to ape the what you think a boss fight might be. You know, unless it was like pressure from someone, but.
The way that came out as like a boss fight, the one, the room with like the two of them in the terminals,
yeah,
like for me was so instantaneous as to what should happen that I never had any problems with them. Like as they were spawning in or whatever, I turned off the consoles.
They managed to chase me for a little bit, but it was not scary. Right?
Yeah.
It was a little bit tense because a thing is chasing me, you know, which and I have no ability to fight back. But I'm just like, oh, okay. And they just look silly,
yeah,
like the electric ones. They're like Dynamo from The Running Man. Like, it just, I don't know. I just like, oh, okay, I gotta turn off these things.
You know? The other fucking side of, like, that Tesla pig thing is the, like, return of the water monster.
Yeah.
That had its own story, like, line way of, like, pigs being interdimensional. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck is going
Everything
on?
Everything is pigs. It can't just be a monster we want to bring back because, you know, it was the best part of Amnesia.
But it was, like, experiments with, you know, what they were trying to create with the Tesla pigs, I guess, that caused these pigs to be interdimensional.
Which,
there's
such a motivation problem. Like, no matter what the machine is trying to do, you can't fit creating Tesla pigs into it. Like, none of the things we've established as a possible motivation for any character has containment space for Tesla pigs. Like, it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Like, and then like, man, and just to gush about it a little bit, like I was so happy with the church until I realized that I was only going to spend like, you know, 6 minutes there.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
I love that idea.
Like,
yeah. It's so cool.
Pig gods.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, this is where the, you know, the pig people worship. And like, that's really cool. And then the, you know, the whole idea of them, like the beds with the cages that they trap people to turn them into pigs and all that stuff is so neat. But that was the strongest thing. Like,
yeah,
stick with the island of Dr. Moreau. Like, somebody is creating pigmen.
It's missing so much and adding so much that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like, like you said, it just desperately needed an editor to come through and, like, actually make a cohesive plot out of it. Like, you can leave some misguided and, you know, janked up mystery to it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't need to be one fluid thought, but it can't be 12 unfluid thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and you can tell the story indirectly. Like, games do that really well. You know, and that's been it's kind of a thrust right now in games, and, you know, from things from like Gone Home to Dark Souls, you know, where the story is something you have to piece together yourself, and that's engaging and great, and it's one of my favorite things.
And yeah, like, you and I both know that's something we really enjoy in games.
But you're not rewarded for it here.
No.
Like, there's no connection between the dots. So, like, spending all this time collecting all the dots just feels like shit.
Well, and there's also no other way to play it. Like,
exactly.
Everyone's getting the exact same experience out of this, which is even worse than Dear Esther was. Like, Dear Esther, at least, you got different random sound bits each time you played it, which was, you know, not nearly enough to drive me to try to play it a second time, but was interesting in that the little bits of story I could piece together would be different from the little bits of story someone else could be pieced together.
Yeah, which is, that was really cool. And this one, the only space for that would be if you're not diligent about collecting things.
Yeah.
But if you're not, then why are you playing?
Right.
You know, like, making it optional here, where it's not optional in Dear Esther.
Yeah, true. Like,
it's ridiculous.
Like, missed a note.
Yeah, like, why not just have a narration that plays? You know, like, you could have just done this as Dear Esther 2, like, horror Dear Esther, and, you know, applied an editor and just had the, you know, just make you walk through hallways, you know, and just cool looking hallways, and, like, I would be into it. But it's kind of like the them trying to do the gamey stuff is worse than not doing it at all.
Yeah.
And,
I'll agree with that.
Yeah. So definitely, and I read an interview with the Friction or the Chinese Room guys, and they're so fucking, like, defiant about it. It's really frustrating. Like, they're just
really?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're equating criticism of this game with, like, people who, you know, want like a traditional narrative and just want, like, a gamey game, like, just want a Gears of War and stuff.
No.
And it's like, that's not the point. You know, like, the writing is the focus, but it can still be bad writing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, some of the individual passages are really lovely. Like, I actually like the language a lot as, like, a H.P. Lovecraft purple prose, like, flowery, you know, I like that. But it's, you know, you're not insalable just because it's like they shot an arrow and then drew a bullseye around what they hit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree.
So,
All right. So Chinese Room, any of you guys are listening to this, we didn't dislike the game. But you did some things wrong.
Yeah, there are some things I liked, some things I didn't like. I'm still interested in you. Like, I want to play Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. Like, I'll probably follow you the entire time I play games, but, you know, please, I just wish, don't dip your, like, just stay golden, pony boys.
Stay golden.
stay on your own. Like, don't dip into my favorite franchise.
I agree. And stick with, like, what you do. If you're not going to go into gameplay puzzling mechanics, like, wholeheartedly, then don't do it at all.
That was the thrust of that interview, was like, we're never going to do that, you know, and, like, that's what they were saying, like, that's never going to be us, you know, stop expecting, like, and then they mentioned some, like, really reductionist kind of examples, but which is fine, but just act like you're not going to,
avoid it completely, like, that's fine. You guys made, you've already made one perfectly fine game that doesn't incorporate any of that.
Yep.
Like, don't half-assed put in little bits of it that end up just taking away from the experience and anything else.
Yep, agreed. Yeah, so I mean, that's the end of the spoiler space for Amnesia, which was longer than, like, the non-spoiler space, but
yeah. That's the way it goes with story-based games.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.